Welcome to the Mod State Podcast. All the things that make me.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. This is episode 102. Can you believe it? We're now... It almost seems like starting over again, but I don't even remember saying, welcome to the Mod State Podcast. This is episode 2. I don't know how little I
listen to our work. I honestly don't recall our first several.
You do not recall?
Well, I know that we talked about somebody that couldn't recall.
Yeah, we did.
But there was so much going on. There was the Attorney General not recalling. There were the shootings. And the fact that we launched this in the land of dreams, New Orleans.
Yeah.
We had a girl carrying a mason jar around a bar offering to sell cannabis. I mean, it was bizarre.
I don't even remember if we must have done the second and third episode in New Orleans, because I don't remember doing the second one back in Detroit.
I think we recorded a few while you were still here.
Yeah, I think we did. And that was when we were really trying to figure out like what we were doing. It was almost as if we were like reporting the news almost. It was interesting, but I mean, we've definitely come a long way.
It has certainly evolved.
Yeah. It's interesting how things like this do evolve and the things
Six
we talk
and a
about.
Half months.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you sort of get in your stride of what works and what doesn't work. You know, we're slowly still figuring that out, but.
I mean, a baby could be born and survive in the time that we've been doing this. Think about that.
good point. You're right.
It could have been conceived on July 11th. And if it was born now.
Listening to our podcast.
What a way to enter the world.
Yeah. No kidding.
Like, send me back.
Yeah. We're done. We're done here. Lock it up. Go back in.
Poor kid. Thank God that's hypothetical.
You never know.
It better be.
I hope it is hypothetical. Well,
we won't do that to your kids.
No, let's not. Anyway, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. If you like what you hear on the Mod State Podcast, go to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as links to our social media accounts and links to the podcast. If you're on your mobile device, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and that's where you'll find links to the podcast. However, you're probably listening somewhere, so continue to do so. And you can also find us on Stitcher Radio now, which is cool. I like that.
Stitcher.fm and somewhere else.
Other places. It's actually kind of exciting. Yeah.
Aside from iTunes and Podomatic, how does happen? I mean, the numbers on Podomatic can vary widely, as we've seen.
Yeah.
Somehow we've gotten five-star ratings on iTunes. That's not a whole lot. But then, obviously, there's enough going on that we're on 8 different platforms now, only 2 of which we put ourselves on.
Yeah, it's interesting how it sort of disseminates, which is exciting because it kind of pops up. Not that we're trolling the internet to find out where we are, but someone...
People tell us.
Yeah, exactly. That's inevitably what happens is...
God loves us. I know he does. He's had a lot to contend with at his time.
Oh, you're right, Brian. You're right. Oh, boy.
Bastards killed his kid, too.
Well, we have made it back for a new week. And for those of you who are looking for a podcast over the weekend, we decided to just take the weekend off and...
it sleazy.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's nice to just... take a little R&R and not be pushing. It'd rather be quality than just quantity. So it's not that we're neglecting our duties as podcast hosts, but
it felt like a good weekend to kind of
hang low, maybe.
Yeah. Let it wobble to the flow, you know, that kind of thing.
Wobble to the flow. Man, we're.
Look. What is it? On the note of which I wanted to talk about, I started thinking back to, for whatever reason, I was at this barbershop my last month in the Navy. I was in this, about 7 miles from Tijuana. That's how far south in San Diego it is, you know. And the Tupac song, you know, California Love was one. I was just thinking, you know, given that I left there with a little bit of a racket on my coat, you know, fresh out of jail, out on bail, fresh out of jail, California dreaming. And I had no idea why that just came. It just came to me, Nate.
It just came to you.
James. Oh, that's okay.
Sometimes when you feel it, you know, you just gotta.
James, I don't think I can see you anymore.
Oh, God, that's an inside joke. Well,
to what you wanted to talk about, aside from me being out on bail
in the rest of the Tupac sentence that I already forgot.
Yeah, I'm good now because I'm not on the run anymore.
Well, I have no idea what we're talking
about. Where else was the perfect place for me to end up without leaving such a situation?
Indeed.
I'm sorry.
I have no idea what we're talking about. I'm going to go to
the judiciary.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I was just going to go to Google and type in what to talk about on the podcast. But yes, we are talking about the federal and state judicial system. And not to go deep, I'm not a lawyer by any sense of the mean. I definitely can read things, and that's mostly what I talk about, the things that I read. However, there have been some things in the past, and I'm sure will come up again, that continue to define narrative in this country. You know, and I don't know that everyone is fully aware of certain definitions and the way things do work. And I mean that in context to the U.S. judicial system, and, you know, to lump that into the state system as well, because the state judicial system does mirror the federal system very closely within the state, because, you know, states do have constitutions, and the Congress there has the power to form the judicial system in their own state.
They're called states for a reason.
Exactly.
It was set up so that actually the Fed was supposed to mirror the states.
Yeah, so that's the, if we go back to founding fathers, they...
Yeah, not that they should mean anything anymore.
No, they don't. They're just some old dudes. They're...
screaming, let me out of this box! Let me out of this box!
Right. But their idea was to set a system up so that states would have... you know, obviously they wanted limited federal government, if that's the way you interpret the Founding Fathers' vision. But so we'll talk about a little bit of that overlap. But mostly this is, excuse me, talking about the federal judicial system. And there's things that have come up, like I said before, terms like legislating from the bench and the idea of the stolen sovereignty or the judicial oligarchy that's in place. And so I figured it would be pertinent to at least discuss a bit of this, because I'm sure in the future we will have discussions about things like the legalization of cannabis. And, you know, I think the most recent landmark Supreme Court case would have been that for same-sex marriage. And you do see, before we dive into the structure, there is a bit of, when you call it legislating from the bench, both you hear in this current climate in 2018, it's really a right push against the legislating from the bench for liberal policies. However, history will show us that there's been legislating from the bench on both sides for, you know, as long as the court has been a tradition and an institution. Excuse me. So I figured we'll just start with the breakdown, and most people here will be fairly familiar. Excuse me. Hold on 1 second. There we go. Better now. Most people will be very familiar with a lot of the terms that we're describing here, the first one starting being the Supreme Court. Everyone knows the Supreme Court, and they know them as the 9 justices that reign supreme, the Supreme Court. I always think of Taco. Mm-hmm. I always think of Taco Bell when you hear the Supreme Court. Supreme Taco, please.
Well, I mean, now, especially with their Illuminati commercials.
Yeah, right.
My personal favorite is the taco fries one or whatever. Oh, go on the mirrors, the X-Files.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's they? The burger people. They!
They. Well, the Supreme Court does hold 9 justices, and for a while prior to Neil Gorsuch's, I don't know what you call it, indoct or
confirmation,
there were 8, and that
indoctrination. I didn't know what you were trying to do.
Yeah. There were 8. That becomes a little problematic when you're trying to discover the constitutionality or unconstitutionality of a law presented to the Supreme Court, because 4 and 4 is rather difficult to find any sort of common ground, but you can obviously see why there are 9 justices. The Supreme Court...
Even ground.
What's that?
At least it's even ground.
It's fair. Well, in this case, it's not fair anymore. There's 9, and that would be... So there's always a chief justice, and then there's 8 associate justices that sit on that court. Now, it is the highest court in the United States, and it was created, I think it was Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution created that, and authorized Congress to pass laws establishing a system of lower courts. So just to be clear, you know, the judicial system, the federal judicial system, was...
Right, Richard Nixon.
Yeah, do you like that?
Riddled with the virus. Diabetes.
Diabetes. Man, this is going to go downhill. The Congress really controls what the judicial system is. In fact, they have the authority to overhaul the judicial system if they feel fit. However, that's a fair rarity.
Well, that's kind of come up recently, though, hasn't it?
It has, and there's...
what do you think?
So it's interesting. When we talk about the Supreme Court, we talk about the Court of Appeals, so I'll just break that down real quick. So below the Supreme Court, obviously, you know, in a country that is so vast as ours, it would be impossible for the Supreme Court to rule on every case that needed to be heard in the federal circuit. So what they did is they designed the Court of Appeals, and there are 13 appellate courts that sit below the U.S. Supreme Court, and these are called the U.S. Court of Appeals. There's 94 federal judicial districts, and they're organized into 12 regional circuits. So just to break all that mumbo-jumbo down, this is sort of on point with the Federal Reserve as well, when it comes down to all these different, like, okay, there's the Federal Reserve, and then there's different districts. But
when people claim the Federal Reserve is complicated, I'm going, have you looked at the judiciary?
Exactly. So there are...
the Fed is just a little better at addressing what matters, yes. Whereas... we've seen what happens when you try and get 450 plus lawyers to agree to something.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, the district courts would be like the 9th district, which it's vast. I mean, it's California, Nevada, Arizona, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, Montana, Guam, Hawaii, and Alaska. The 10th district is...
It's widely known as the most liberal district.
Yes, and we'll kind of get into that.
This is the 9th Circuit Court, but that's a different matter.
Yes, and so then there's the 10th, which is Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, New Mexico, Kansas, and Oklahoma. And then there's the 5th district, which is actually based down in New Orleans, and that takes Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. So it goes on, and they're broken down in this way. And obviously, the point...
God, it's based here, not in Texas or Mississippi.
Yeah, could be...
Can you imagine? I mean, I'm sure people out there we know which one's more conservative. Yeah, well, imagine if it was based in, you know, El Paso or
Dallas,
or
Texas,
Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah, it'd be wildly different. I mean, this is where we get into the polarization, politicalization of...
Yeah, I promise you'd rather it be in South Louisiana.
Yeah, exactly.
Catholics tend to be a lot more moderate, and there's kind of a few of those in South Louisiana.
There's a few. So these appellate courts, their task is to determine whether or not the law was applied correctly in trial court. So the appeals court consists of 3 judges, and they don't use a jury. So that's interesting in the context of the Court of Appeals. So, for example...
It's very Phoenician of them.
It is interesting. What they do is they hear challenges to district court decisions from courts located within the circuit. as well as appeals from federal administrative agencies. So this is, would be an example, I believe, of, let's say, someone was convicted within the district or within the circuit, and they present an appeal to the Court of Appeals, and this, as you know, does not go back to trial. There is no jury, and the three judge panel then hears this and decides whether or not, well, they don't, but they, it's obviously gone through. They have to present a writ, I believe. I don't know the exact language for it.
Let's say, WRIT,
a writ. And then they will look and see whether or not they're, and they don't look necessarily at the evidence. There's witnesses that go forth, and the lawyers will present at that case. But really what they're doing is they're just looking at the evidence and whether or not that individual got a fair trial based on whether or not the judge, you know, had the right sentence, whether it really was a true conviction or not. So that's why you'll see
constitutional representation.
Yes, exactly. Whether or not their a court-appointed lawyer was dog shit or not, like those kind of things come up within the U.S. Court of Appeals.
That's so ugly.
I know. I'm an ugly person.
No. You, sir, you're beautiful. That your dreamy eyes.
Oh, thank you.
You're very, very fine jawline.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much. I needed that. Another case would be in the U.S. Court of Appeals on this three-judge panel would be the issue in North Carolina recently, where there was a gerrymandering case brought forth, and this was to look at the congressional districts within North Carolina and whether or not
we wrapped on this quite a bit.
Yeah, we did. So this, when I said there was a three-judge panel that looked at the constitutionality of the case, this would have been in the U.S. Court of Appeals, where this three-judge panel looked at it. There was no jury. It was essentially them looking at the evidence.
Where does this spear come to a head here?
Well, that's a good question. So we did talk about, you know, ideally the Ninth Circuit, so the most liberal region circuit in the nation. So before we,
and why does that matter?
So it's interesting why
I guess not being flippant. Why does that?
So this comes back down to legislating from the bench, and as we know, we would hope that if we ever were stuck in a case where we had to go to court, we would have a non-biased judge. That we would have a judge that looks at the evidence, examines the evidence, and then commits a sentence or a plea, or, you know, guilty or non-guilty plea based on evidence, and there's correct due process that goes into this. So where people get a little lit, if you will, or upset, is when a judge...
They get lit a lot of places.
Yeah, exactly. where there would be a ruling that they feel doesn't, that it's almost as if the boundaries have been overstepped.
So that being upon it.
Yeah. That precedent is being set at a lower level in the judicial system than they feel like it should be, i.e. Trump's travel ban. This is probably the most recent situation where you can look and see where a district judge, a federal appointed judge, made a decision to stop or find Trump's travel ban, President Trump's travel ban, as unconstitutional. So,
and then,
so this
it gets upheld later on. I mean, it's like this yeah. game. To me, it's a game of ping pong that adjusts itself one way or the other. One president appoints X amount of leftists, the other goes far right. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's where it becomes, I don't want to say problematic because that's not the case, but the fact that we are appointing a judge based on their political stance, I think, for me, viscerally, when I think about it, it doesn't jive very well because, again,
it's not the whole point of the judiciary.
It's not the point of the judiciary at all. The point is,
but they are human beings.
Exactly.
At the same time, inevitably, I mean, anybody that tells you they don't have an opinion, oh, I'm completely non-biased. Well, to me, that tells me one thing. If you truly are, now, most people that say that, I don't believe another word they say. But if you really are unbiased, that tells me you are completely uneducated on the subject.
Yes. And there, I think where people get upset about decisions like this being made at the district court level as opposed to the Supreme Court level.
They didn't get to make it?
That could be it, possibly. But a lot
and
of
the, ask me.
A lot of the time in the U.S. Court of Appeals, before it gets to the Supreme Court, it's set in stone. Like that decision that's made, most of the time the Supreme Court actually upholds whatever the U.S. Court of Appeals makes their decision on. So for a lot of people get upset that you're creating precedent for things that we that need to be worked out at the highest court in the law, in the land rather. And I get that. I mean, I do get that to a point.
They can only hear so many cases at the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
That's why, they announce it almost a year ahead of time what they're going to hear.
Exactly. So there obviously are many issues.
Have they even agreed to hear the Silk Road case yet, the Ross Ulbricht case?
No, I don't think so. literally 1% of all
it's
cases.
It's a huge Fourth Amendment case.
It is huge.
They haven't agreed to hear it yet.
And the 1% of all cases that go to the Supreme Court to even have argument heard, 1% are even heard.
We need to look that up, though, by the way, because that's a huge Fourth Amendment issue.
Yeah, we definitely, I think
they should hear argument on that case.
Yeah, because again, it's precedent, and that's what goes to the Supreme Court.
Nonviolent crime with life without parole.
Yeah, these are the cases where, there really isn't anything in the law that tips one way or the other, and that's where the Supreme Court really has its place.
His case, I think there is. It's simply, I can't comment because I'm not an attorney. I wasn't a justice at the trial, but given that the two agents involved are now serving time for things like the malfeasance regarding the evidence that they're accused of in that case, to me bears, and the fact that this evidence against him that those agents brought can be heard, but then the defense is told you can't bring up those two agents going to prison.
Yeah.
Say what?
Yeah. That's a very interesting case. And I think once it does go, we'll follow it more closely.
We should look at that. We should follow up on that to see. I mean, they will hear things, and you brought this up precast, and I'm sure it's a sub point here at some level, but they will hear things based on popular outcry.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where legislating from the bench comes from. So again, just to kind of hammer this point home, this can be on the left, this can be on the right, but in this case, you see more as popular opinion on certain cases or certain public or social issues progress. And I mean, they change over time. So the idea would be same-sex marriage. I think eventually we'll see the legalization of cannabis, where, public opinion shows that 60% of Americans are okay with recreational marijuana use. So maybe in 10 years down the road, 85% of the nation are either on one end, they're either apathetic or they would like to see recreational cannabis go forward. So where legislating from the bench comes from, when there's no precedent for law, or there is law that says this is the way it is, it's a Schedule I narcotic, and you can go to prison, it's illegal to traffic, illegal to use. There is law that says that. However, what can happen is the judge or the judicial branch will, when that case is actually presented, maybe there's a lawsuit that's put forward which says this needs to change, they will, in a way, sort of test the court of popular opinion as to where most of the United States sits.
Are you comfortable with that?
Is that the reason why? Yeah, I was just
law should be framed.
I was just kind of getting to that.
My apologies.
No. I'm glad you brought it up. It is, to me, that is a bit problematic, and I don't think that is the way they vote most of the time. However,
right, because we're not, to be clear here, I wasn't alluding to anything, so our listeners are clear. We're not talking about the Brown versus the Board of Education, because while we're not going to get into the semantics of whether the founders really meant all men created with certain inalienable rights, et cetera, et al., That's not the point. The point is today we must translate that as meaning that. So
yes,
of course, Brown versus Vegetation was correct.
Exactly. So this is the issue.
I don't view that as legislating for the veg.
I agree with you. So this is where I think purists or originalists or federalists, whatever you want to name them,
absolutists, original tenors, whatever.
Exactly. They would say
that the Scalias.
The Scalias, that every judge has especially in the U.S. Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court, and those federal district courts where you're appointed by the Senate, confirmed within
jurisprudence,
that you have an obligation to uphold the law based on the Constitution. So there are cases where they say, look, there's bedrock cases that are going forward. Maybe it's abortion. Maybe it's immigration. Maybe it's, you name it, the federal legalization of cannabis, even though there's nothing in the Constitution that talks about that, that you have
George
these...
Washington grew it, yeah, but let's forget that for a moment.
They all smoked it, but okay. That they're literally, when these district courts decide, when the U.S. Court of Appeals makes a decision, that really makes it very unlikely that the Supreme Court will even take up the case. So this is where it does become, to me, a bit problematic when
they should be reticent to overturn a lower court's rule. I mean, it's like being the owner of a restaurant. And I've had several of these situations, not that I'm an owner, but I've worked at the bar and even as a busser in restaurants where the owner is so hands-on. They're constantly overturning the decisions of the GM. They're paying $70,000 a year. I'm going, so why in the hell are you paying them $6,000 a month?
Yeah.
If you're going to be the GM, then you fire the son of a bitch.
Exactly. So I do get, obviously, there's a twofold reason. One, the Supreme Court can't hear every case. However,
not feasible. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second
Otherwise,
would be.
We don't need you.
Yeah. And it would be giving power to those U.S. Court of Appeals and those districts and those circuits.
Because we're not here to uphold the Constitution to some degree. Everyone must be an original intender to some degree. Because otherwise, we need to get rid of either the judiciary or the legislature.
Exactly.
One or the other.
Exactly. So there have been some cases where, you know, or in this case, they say that these bedrock cases should be going to the Supreme Court. And when the decisions are made in the U.S. Court of Appeals and the district courts, that the Supreme Court's not even going to hear it, and we're just sort of lost. And I can see how people would feel that the judiciary would be stacked against them if there are left-leaning or right-leaning judges. I mean, this is why you hear, you know, people up in arms about the federal judiciary appointees that Donald Trump is presenting and wants in place. And there is a degree.
We heard the same thing when Barack Obama was president. Exactly. He's appointing a bunch of commies.
Yeah, you hear the same thing. However, just like you said, at a level, you do have to uphold law and you do have to decide whether or not something is constitutional or unconstitutional.
Well, that's
based
why I have
on
the Constitution.
Document.
There's exactly. only so fluid that document can be.
Exactly. Another thing we hear is, again, I brought this up about Donald Trump's travel ban, is that how can just one U.S. district judge make the decision for the whole nation? Well,
it's for the protection of the whole nation, as in the case of something like a Brown versus Board of Education that's being held. Not saying that something like that couldn't in the future be decided by the Supreme Court, but it's what if it is heard, say, in the federal district court in New Orleans? Well, the judge, the panel there may say, hey, look, this is a macro societal good.
Yeah, exactly. So they do. So in that case, they do have certain circumstances. They have
cuts both ways.
Yeah, they have nationwide jurisdiction, and they do on specialized issues, not on everything, but they do have.
I think rightfully so.
And I agree with you. I do now. And this is the whole checks and balances.
And
you
I'm a non-leftist saying this. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's
protection, just like the ACLU is represented homeschoolers.
Yeah.
It's not just a leftist.
Exactly. It isn't. And I think what we like to do is
us and them.
Us and them. Exactly. And again, you brought up that point. I don't know that I articulated clear enough on it. Is it right to be creating law and rewriting precedent based on public opinion and popular opinion? What I will say is that what we do know is that over time, things do change, whether that's with technology, whether that's the growth of a nation, whether that's globalization, things do change.
And we're talking about imperfect organizations and imperfect documents created and formulated by imperfect beings.
Yes.
So, of course, things... Look, if this thing lasts 75 years, God willing, I'm not going to be here in 75 more years, okay? You might be, God bless you, but I doubt you'll still be, you know, top dog at Mondstadt, okay? Other people will be in charge of this thing. Is it going to be the exact same as it is today, aside from the advancement of technology? No. Should it be the exact same as the ideals we have now? Well, okay, when it comes to the basic framework of all nonviolent views, welcome. Well, I think that's the way we ought to look at the Constitution. I mean, obviously, the United States Constitution is a much bigger deal, and that's the whole reason Mondstadt's around, is to kind of remind people of that. But I think the spirit, the song remains the same, right?
Yeah, I agree. There, if we were to never change the Constitution, if we were to never make amendments, if we were never to look at its how it would be applicable to society today, then I think we'd be in a far weirder place in 2018.
I'm not real thrilled at the idea of having black people as slaves still.
Your 14th...
Women not being able to vote.
Yeah, 14th and 15th Amendment for equal rights as a citizen. Like, there's obviously...
Just thought.
Obviously, these... But I think where some of the hot button issues when it comes down to the U.S. Court of Appeals and district courts making decisions would be based on... I guess you'd say traditional family values or moral values, with the idea
God
of
bless it.
Gay marriage, transgenderism, and stuff like that.
You did it.
I did bring it up.
You had to do it.
But these are issues where certain sides, and I will say definitely more on the conservative side, takes issue, and this is where they say this is legislating from the bench.
Did you hear my Napoleon Dynamite sigh there?
I did hear. Yeah.
Okay. Flip for me to where the founders mentioned anything about marriage not being an institution of the state. Flip to any part in a document by the big three where the marriage rights, R-I-T-E-S, are. Marriage, yeah, folks, is an institution of the state about two consenting adults. Get over it.
Oh, man. I almost didn't bait you that way. And it wasn't a bait. It was just a...
You're free to bait. Hey, that's how we debate.
Ah, I see what you did there. That was good.
No, but seriously, look, feel free. Look, I am an original intenter, and I'm telling you there is no basis for discrimination against two consenting adults wanting to enter into a legal union. I mean, this is a non-starter.
So let me read just briefly here. This is an article written by one of my favorite, and not favorite, I just mean, when I really want some true religious conservative perspective,
Vladimir Lenin has been dead for quite some time.
I listened to Daniel Horowitz at the Conservative Review, but here is an idea of the idea.
Fire with fire, huh? Jew with Jew, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
So this is precedent works only one way. And this is a snippet. This is a snippet from his article that says 12 reasons why federal judiciary is broken.
He says you really mess with my Zen thing here, Nate.
Sorry. Here we go. So he goes, this is Daniel Horowitz, says by the time conservatives might have sufficient GOP governance to actually make a dent in the lower courts and change the balance of the Supreme Court, we will lose power anyway. No party has ever been in office for more than 12 years aside from the FDR era. Democrats will come roaring back as the pendulum always swings back and forth and will continue to appoint crazies to the bench. Unlike our judges, who uphold even post-constitutional precedent, the left judges have no qualms about overturning 200 years of settled case law and the plain meaning of the Constitution. After all, how else can you explain gay marriage, transgenderism, and overturning immigration enforcement laws? As long as there is one court decision overturning natural law and fundamental rights, our side tends to respect it thereafter, which is why we won't even get to this point.
So, no, I know you're not relating this as a representation of my views.
Oh, 100% not.
Because going back to, you cannot have precedent where there was not a statement made in the first place.
Yeah, that's... But I think he's making the point here. Well, look...
He's taking acid.
Yeah, he said, look, you know...
Jesus!
200 years ago, we settled this case law, and this is the way it should be.
No, we didn't.
And that's what I said. That I mean, when I read something like this...
Are you high?
Yeah, I say, Daniel, 200 years. I mean, can... Listen, 200 years ago... If we were doing the same thing today that we were doing 200 years ago, this country would be insane.
A thousand years ago, France was called Gaul.
Yeah, exactly. So
what's his point?
And I think
there was nothing said by the framers, nor, I might add, Jesus Christ, about homosexuals.
So this is
that ring a bell for any red meters?
This is where it becomes where law and religion sort of meld in this really weird way.
I'm about to freak out. I'm about to freak out.
Yeah. So I did want to read that to you because this is an opinion.
You did it. Yeah, you can do it.
This is an opinion of a lot of people in the United States. And the left have no qualms about overturning 200 years of settled
case
law.
You have no qualms about overturning my mood.
I do not. That to me, this is where we fundamentally have a problem, that we're not willing to look at 200 year case law that's been settled. That we need, it's this idea, this pining for the past. Well, you know what? I am sure, and I am very aware that the court of popular opinion and what we deem right and what we deem wrong changes well over 200 years, or well before 200 years.
Yeah, and the court of popular opinion has also made the Kardashians popular. So careful how you try.
Fair enough. And I am not for one second asserting the fact that we need to have law based on popular opinion.
So what are you asserting?
It's a good question. I think after doing...
I get what you're not asserting.
Yeah, I think after doing the research, there's a couple things that I find that maybe would have an appeasement of this idea of the judicial oligarchy. And the one thing that we don't have within the district or within the U.S. Court of Appeals and the U.S. federal judicial system are term limits. The only people that have term limits are appointed magistrates within the district. So that means there's the sort of like the quote-unquote helper of the district, U.S. district magistrate or judge, rather. So they're able to see things like evidence before a trial, bail, stuff like that. And they typically have an 8-year term if they work full time and a 4-year term if they work part time. So there is this idea that maybe if we're worried about people being in these positions for a long period of time, that maybe we should enact term limits for federal judicial slots and positions.
Positions and slots and
slots and jobs. Yeah, exactly. So I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think that may be something. I don't think that Congress, because Congress has the law to overhaul the judicial system, but they haven't done it.
And with two-thirds majority.
Yes, with two-thirds majority.
Two-thirds of them would not vote on any given day to say they like alcohol.
Yeah, so to overhaul the judicial system is a long shot.
Frickin' forbid they agree on anything in mass. So, the power is technically there. Just like I've got the power to blast away a cat with a shotgun. The likelihood of that is nil.
Mm-hmm. Because you like cats.
So, yes. Not exactly. Because Congress likes blues, which they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, so let's move on.
Exactly. So I don't have a whole lot more here. I do think that there may be a bipartisan case to make a term limit for the judiciary. However, I think that opens up a can of worms when it comes to the point of
run the risk of making them a lame duck. Then,
exactly.
You're going to have U.S. attorneys, just like a DA would, saying, hey, we'll wait another 18 months until so-and-so is off the bench.
Exactly.
We have different ideology on the bench. That's the way it is. Should it be? No, but what is and what should be, and then back to what is.
Exactly. So
different sides of the revolving door.
Exactly. So I am going to, just for your own wonderful reading privilege, you can read some Daniel Horowitz. I'm going to put it in the show notes. I want you to read it and then just let me know how you feel. I mean, just that alone.
You're not telling me that.
I didn't think it was going to get you that fired up, but
Dude, you did this before to me.
I know. I'm sorry.
A private conversation.
My bad. I didn't mean to do it on the podcast.
You know how...
yeah. My bad.
You know how everybody thinks anybody that's an original tenor, you just... I can't even think of the correct terminology. You see what you've done?
I've done it. Look at that. On Mod State Podcast, I've done it, folks. Look, I don't have a whole lot more to add to this, other than I think it's interesting to look up the structure, and see for yourself and figure out how you feel about the judiciary and whether or not you think there are some overhauls. Obviously, there's some people out there that feel very strongly about the judicial oligarchy, but overall, I hope that maybe what this episode did was clear up what the Court of Appeals is, who is on the Court of Appeals, how they do make nationwide decisions because of their jurisdiction. We didn't really touch
on that. You want to talk about an oligarchy? You want to talk about miscarriage of justice? Look up what happened to the band Pussy Riot, and no, that's not a joke.
Oh, yeah.
When they publicly supported homosexuality in Russia. Go ahead and Bing or Google that, folks.
Yeah, and then you'll be pretty damn happy that you live in this country.
Be very happy with Neil Gorsuch and Donald Trump.
Yeah, wow.
I promise you.
That's some macro look that people have to do, but that's a very interesting case.
I promise you, I'd rather live under Donald John Trump than Vladimir Putin.
100%, my friend. Well, with that, we are at 41
Eagle
minutes.
Lost the status unatus.
Yep, indeed. We won't hammer home the judiciary any further, but we will be back this week. I promise we'll get to our geographical regions next week, barring any craziness that happens. But we will be back for the midweek wrap on Wednesday, so you can hear us again.
I hope I'm back.
Did I put the nail in the coffin?
No, you've cut me.
I've gone and done it. Well, let me we'll get you off this.
I love you, so I'll be back.
Thanks. Get you off the live recording so you can lick your wounds. But until next time, my friend,
wow.
We'll see you.